Yes, hello there and welcome to Join Up Darts. This is an archive show, which means that I'm not here at the moment, but it's all pre-recorded. But it does give you just a glimpse of what's been happening on the iTunes number one business entrepreneur show since we launched. Now, this show is different and you'll hear laughter, tears, shocking stories, real life turmoil, and of course, the kind of success blueprint that will change your life forever. If you want the dream life, then all the answers are here. Now, these are the old episodes, so to get right up to date listening to the latest stuff, then simply search Join Up Darts, click subscribe, and never miss an episode again. And of course, over at joinupdarts.com, you can get instant access to our free 12-day podcasting course or loads of amazing free downloads to kickstart your own entrepreneurial journey, all made by my own fair hand. So let's get on with the show. You got a lot of catching up to do after all. Enjoy.
When we're young, we have an amazing, positive outlook about how great life is going to be. But somewhere along the line, we forget to dream and end up settling. Join Up Dots features amazing people who refuse to give up and chose to go after their dreams. This is your blueprint for greatness. So here's your host, live from the back of his garden in the UK, David Ralph.
Hello, world. How are we? How are you all, you Join Up Dots listeners? Are you ready for another rocking and rolling show? Well, I hope you are, because this is episode 188. And normally I have a little chat beforehand, but today I'm going to steam straight into it because she is a lady who has got so many areas to touch on and discuss. Really, we need the full amount of time. Coming originally from the South American country of Chile, our guest has set out on a path to not only create her dream life, but also to help the world find theirs too. As the founder of Money and You and other successful financial platforms, she knows and shares how we can all develop systems that will accelerate the growth of our businesses. And what she gives us is not just manuals full of structures and systems, but a complete mindset shift to believe that success is ours to have. She can rewire us all to think like multimillionaires. She's appeared on multiple movies, been quoted in hundreds of books, and appeared on radio and TV shows all over the world. But how does a lady come from Chile, move to America, and create a platform of success that crosses the globe and affects students in over 65 countries? And how did today's guest learn the skills for success that elude so many people? And that is what I want to talk about today, how someone can think big, dream big, and achieve big things when so many others get stuck before even beginning. Is it that she took chances that most other people wouldn't have taken, or simply that she was luckier than most? Well, let's find out as we bring onto the show to start Joining Up Dots, the one and only Dame DC Cordova. How are you, DC?
I'm fine. Thank you so much. That sounds really good. I want to listen to her.
Yeah, I will pre-record it and I will send it out to you because this is going to be a good one. You're going to like this guest, as you say, because she's fascinating. She has got areas that it could be a nine-parter, I think, on this one. We could go for hour upon hour upon hour because it is. It's a fascinating story going from Chile to America and then crossing the world as you have done. When you sort of reflect back, are you sort of surprised at what you've done, or does it just seem so many small things that you can't really group them together?
I am delighted. You know, I'm in my 60s now, and I feel 25 like most people in their 60s do. And I am very delighted that out of having so much sadness and pain when I first got started as an adult in my life, that I was able to turn it around. But it took a lot of hard work. And I'm just really grateful. The word is grateful that it all turned out really well and that I'm able to really touch so many people. So gratefulness is a better word.
Well, when you were 25, did you think 65 was going to be old?
Yes.
Are you kind of surprised that you're 65?
Oh, I tell you, what is so interesting is that I am so grateful. And my mother, I still have a mom, she's 89. But my mom does say, you know, when I entered my 60s, I didn't look like you, I didn't act like you, I didn't have the level of health that you have. And it's really at the time that we're living now. You know, I stopped drinking when I was 38. I always tell all my friends, my young friends, if you are under 40, you still have a few more years. But once you pass 40, you really do need to stop. start taking care of yourself, because that's when there's a shift that occurs. And I was wise enough to be around people that really knew the body and knew about health. And they just really advised me. So I stopped eating red meat when I was 30. I stopped having caffeine when I was 36, alcohol at 38. And then just began to really understand the immune system. So I'm very, very youthful. You know, I still have 40-year-olds chasing me around. And I go, do you realize how old I am? And they go, this is a good time for you to be a cougar. And I said, well, not really, but thank you so much. And it makes you feel so good. And it has to do with so much with how we feel inside, because I have met people that were in their 90s and they were so inspirational and so beautiful and so youthful. So it has to do with energy more than how your body looks.
So if I lined it up, do you see, and I said there's a bit of red meat there, there's coffee or there's alcohol, which one would you miss the most?
Let me see. It would have to be, oh gosh, that's such a good question. If I was to, I probably alcohol, you know, it's like I was a good drinker, you know, and because it is so much part of our culture, you know, wherever you go. I mean, people, because I'm so, you know, silly and funny, and I'm always laughing. Most people don't realize that I don't drink. I always have a drink in my hand. It's always, you know, some kind of Perrier or something. But people, I think, assume that it's something else. So some people are very surprised that I don't drink. So it's like, it's a social thing. And that was the hardest thing about it. But then after a while, it takes you, most people don't realize this, it takes you about 2 years to sober up. Even though I wasn't like a chronic alcoholic kind of person that had to go to the 12 steps or anything like that, it took 2 years after I quit drinking, one morning, almost to the day, one morning I woke up and I was completely sober. So it's a lot of it has to do with vibration. It has to do with frequencies, which it has been scientifically proven now that you hold certain frequencies in your cells, and once those shift, then your whole life shifts. And this is, I mean, I wish I had had the technology that they now have, the discoveries that they now have about cellular, about frequencies, about the brain that they had when we first started in this business nearly 40 years ago. So this is not just me talking about, you know, sounding like a California person. This is actually proven. So It shifts, and being sober is a trip. It's so much fun because I get very, very high off of things that are so simple. A beautiful sunset, a beautiful sunrise, you know, a good cup of tea, a good conversation, you know, being with my sweetie. That is so much more of a high, but it does require for one to really train yourself to be in that way.
Because I've kind of given up on alcohol, or alcohol's given up on me. I just find that I drink such small amounts now that it has a huge effect on me. And I used to sort of work up in the city of London where it was a drinking culture, and you would drink at lunchtime and you would drink in the evening. And your body just could kind of get used to it. And now I go out and I just have what I used to have in a lunchtime in an evening. I feel terrible for about 2 days afterwards. But it's still that social thing. It's kind of almost easier to say, yes, I'll have a drink than not, because then most people go, oh, you're not drinking tonight. You're driving. It's that social environment that you're kind of ingrained in.
And it also has to do with the choices that you make. I know this is, women are really going to understand this, but mine had to do too with I found out that alcohol gives you a lot of wrinkles. So at that time I was 38 years old, and I, you know, at the thought of being 50 with a lot of wrinkles, and it actually worked. I have very few wrinkles. And so, you know, it dries up many things. It's not the best thing. The best thing for you to do is to just really look into it, study it, research. I say this about everything, not just about alcohol. I say this about business and money and children, marriage, where you're going to live, what research you're going to do. it's like, what choices are you going to make? And a lot of people make uneducated choices that are so life-changing. And that includes alcohol. I mean, I have friends that, you know, drink a little bit of wine every day, and they are completely sober. They're great people, and they don't have any challenges, and very healthy. So it's just a matter of being educated. This is at every area of your life. Never make decisions that are major when you are very emotional, when you are upset, hurt, angry, or have just had the shock of your life, or have had the best news of your life. Sober up emotionally. This is the key, is to be sober emotionally, and then you can make very clear decisions that will really affect your life. I mean, the dumbest decisions I have ever made in my life were under tremendous endorphins in my body, or tremendous sadness, that were so heartbreaking, you know. And so that was a thing that I learned in my 30s and really instigated by the time in my 40s. And it has been one of the greatest secrets to my success.
So if we take you back in time, which I like to do on Join Up Dots, and you have a small girl in Chile, obviously it's a million miles away from where you are now. But what commonalities are there between where you are and where you started? Are there similarities?
There were so very little. I grew up in a village in Santiago, Chile. Everybody knew everybody. You know, that when you needed a babysitter, you pretty much yell out the door and said, who's going to take care of Dorisita today? That was my little girl name. And it was like somebody would yell and say, she can stay with me tonight. You know, that was it. That's how you arrange babysitters in Santiago in the 50s. And then when I was 12, my mother married a man that had been very wealthy but had lost everything, and the United States had a call for immigrants. So we went to Los Angeles in the early 60s, and I went into a neighborhood that was so different. It couldn't have been more different. And not only that, but the educational system in the United States is so different than Chile's. But, you know, I had graduated from sixth grade, and I was getting ready to go into seventh grade, and I had to choose between whether I was going to learn French, English, or something else. I think it was Portuguese and mathematics. So when they put me, we came in the middle of the semester, they put me on the sixth grade. I thought I was with a bunch of third graders. And so immediately that was felt, and there was the streets were so lonely. I still find that about the United States. I was just in Europe, and I was just in Croatia, you know, and the streets, the neighborhoods with the kids outside and the people sitting in the front of their houses talking to neighbors, that's how I grew up. And the United States is a very, very, I find it a very lonely place.
And did you resent being pulled from Chile? Obviously, you didn't have a choice as a child.
I did have a choice. Yeah. I could have stayed with my auntie and my grandmother, but I wouldn't have never left my mother. Yes, I did resent it very much. And the reason you call me DC, my name is Doris del Carmen Cordova Machel. I was from Doris. I was called Doris. And I'm sure that every Doris on the planet loves their name. I didn't. And I suffered with that name until I was 21. And my boyfriend at the time and best friend one day, he says, I'm giving you a new name because I know you hate your name. And that's when I started being called DC. That was very traumatic for a 12-year-old. So I made a lot of decisions very young because of that move.
And so obviously you've become very, very successful. But the thing that I was surprised at when we had a quick chat beforehand was you became very successful early on in life and then decided that you wanted more. It wasn't the path you wanted. So if we can just focus on that first bit up to the age of 25, how did you get success? How did you channel your energies? You come from Chile, you're in America in a strange country, you're in a strange education system. And it's not really that long after you come out of the education system that you're already deciding that you want to move on to something different. So what occurred there?
Oh, pretty much. I was a typical, you know, Los Angeles kid until I was 18. And I was madly in love with my best friend, and he was killed a month before we were supposed to be married. And that was in March, and I didn't know that I was pregnant. So on his birthday, on July 17th, I was so devastated, and I miscarried the baby. And this, I was still only 18 years old, and I was so devastated. So in my family, the way that we handle devastation is by working very hard. And so I became a workaholic, and I was very successful, a cheerleader, you know, and did lots of courses. I was going to grow up to be an interpreter in the United Nations because I had a vision that I was going to be in a big body of international people. It looked like the UN, so I started taking languages. One thing led to another. I began to work as an interpreter. I was an assistant legal secretary, then an interpreter, English and Spanish. And then I ran into court reporting, fell in love with court reporting, and found out that that was an amazing profession. And I was just sharp. I was just really smart. I had learned a lot from the business cases that I had seen. I had learned a lot from the immigrant that my family had been surrounded by. My stepfather had been wealthy. And him and all his buddies used to meet every weekend and figure out how they were going to do businesses together. So I learned about leverage from them when I was a teenager. And I ended up becoming a very successful court reporter. And then I was thinking about going to law school so that I could be an attorney. I was always thinking of how can I be more successful? But then there was a series of things that occurred in Los Angeles. I was working. Did you ever see the O.J. Simpson case?
Mm,
did you ever
see that case? Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Every day they used to show a building, the criminal courts building. It's called CCB. I used to work in that building, in the same building that O.J. Simpson got prosecuted in. And I used to like, oh my God, they're showing my building every day, you know, because I still love to watch cases like that. And I had a series of circumstances that occurred, and I realized that I was the most unhappy 25-year-old you ever met. And since I was going to be depressed anyway and sad, and it didn't matter how much money I had, it didn't matter how good-looking I was, how many boyfriends I had, none of that, which is what really matters to you when you're 25, I moved to Hawaii. And I decided to be depressed in a beautiful place. And when I was in Hawaii, my next boyfriend was a gorgeous, gorgeous pilot. I had a yacht that was gorgeous. I learned how to be a sailor with him. And when I was 26 years old in September, I had what is considered an enlightenment, an epiphany by seeing some of the most beautiful sights, Hanalei Bay, Kauai, which I recommend if you haven't been there to go there. And it is one of the most beautiful spots on earth. And beauty heals. What a lot of people don't realize is that beauty heals. And basically, I had an epiphany and my heart opened up again. My heart had been shut down for 8 years from the moment that I found out that my boyfriend had been killed and then my baby had died. And then I had another miscarriage when I was 21, had all these friends that had also passed on. And then I was just... I mean, the Australians have a really good word. The word is beaten up emotionally, and life had not treated me well. I mean, I was so upset and so sad, and I didn't know it. So when my heart opened up, I started a healing process, and for the first time, I began to see more clearly and decided to, okay, I know how to make money. I know how to build businesses. I know how to do these things. Let me go find something that I really love. And 2 years later, I ran into the first business school for entrepreneurs of its kind that combined sound business principles and higher consciousness principles, personal development principles, fell in love with the work, ended up becoming a partner, ended up owning it, and been doing that for 35 years.
So it's one of those things that when I hear your story, obviously it seems so simple that you seem to go from one thing to the other. It's always going to seem simple when it's in a 50-minute sort of format of a show. But you were taking very dramatic statements of intent, weren't you? That you were happy, yes. You were very unhappy in Los Angeles, so you're going to move to Hawaii. Why did you do that? Why did you just not move up the road? Why didn't you get another job? Did you feel that you had to go? And Hawaii's thousands of miles away from America. It's really on its own, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, it's not even America. Hawaii is its own country, really. I had been doing research. This is something I really want people to know. Follow the clues in your own heart and in your own mind. There are so many things that we already know, but if they are not comfortable or we don't want to admit something to ourselves, we begin to lie to ourselves, or we don't want to look at it. And this is a very big mistake that we can make as human beings. And I had been doing research. I already knew that I was very unhappy. And I can't talk a lot about what really happened in Los Angeles, but I'll give you a very fast overview. You know, I was in the criminal court system, and every day we were prosecuting people for creating crimes and for using drugs and prostitution and all these things. And I ended up with a group of policemen. I was dating a policeman. It was my first time he took me out on a date and took me to a party that was not an appropriate party because they were doing drugs. And I freaked out because I was a very kind of clean, I always have been. My integrity has always been very high. And I knew that I had just joined a club that I should have never joined. By the way, later in 1979, the LAPD did a huge, clearly they got caught, and they did a huge cleaning of the LAPD. The LAPD is one of the cleanest police departments in the whole world, probably. They're very strict. And so all that got cleaned up, but the universe, the great spirit took me to this very intense place where my integrity was so compromised. And this is where a lot of human beings are in the presence of something that is so compromising their integrity. And sometimes it's not an illegal thing. Sometimes it's just a moral thing, but they justify in their heads and they allow themselves to stay in the presence or allow it to happen, or they make a different decision the way that I did, which was I was literally running away. And I had done research in many different countries, including European countries, if I could be a co-reporter there. And I was I was at the top of my field. I was a certified Schoenherr reporter. I was working in the criminal court system, which was very hard to get into, making lots of money. So I could get a job anywhere, but I had been to Hawaii a couple of times on vacation and had fallen already in love with it. I am madly in love with Hawaii since I was 24 years old and knew that I had to go there, but it was my destiny. It was my destiny. So there was a combination of being prepared, of being ready, then there is your destiny, and then there's luck. And I truly believe that it is a combination, and we get very lucky when we're very good people, we follow good clues, and we also make the tough decisions, which a lot of human beings don't want to make them, and that hurts them. That affects you for the rest of your life, so sometimes we do have to make tough decisions.
Well, let's play a speech now, which says a lot about what you're talking about, making tough decisions. And this is something that we play generally at this time of the show. So this is Jim Carrey.
My father could have been a great comedian, but he didn't believe that that was possible for him. And so he made a conservative choice. Instead, he got a safe job as an accountant. And when I was 12 years old, he was let go from that safe job. And our family had to do whatever we could to survive. I learned many great lessons from my father. Not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Now, I feel that you will connect to those words. Would I be right?
Absolutely. And I love Jim Carrey, and I have friends of his, and he's a very enlightened human being. Very beautiful. Yes.
Well, what do those words mean to you, that you might as well take a chance on something you love?
You know, we may have future lives, we may have had past lives, but this is the only life we have, and it goes by very, very fast. I am in awe of how fast life goes, and the more that you advance in age, the faster that it goes. So what kind of a life do you want to live? You know, 10 years are going to happen like that. 30 years are going to happen like that. And I'm very clear that I'm going to be 100 in a blink. So how do you really want to live? And do you want to live a life of desperation? There's poems on that and movies on that. Or do you really want to live a life that that you really choose the present moment. And you know, like one of my sayings is to really that this moment is the first moment of the rest of my life, and transformation only takes a second. You know, you can transform whatever it is that's going on inside of you in a second. The tough part is then when the brain kicks in, when the ego kicks in, and then you begin to get the reality of what it's going to take for you to follow up with that decision. But there's either you're either going to take the easy road that turns into the hard road, and I truly believe that to be true. I've seen it so many times. Or you take sometimes the tough road, which does turn into the easy road, because it's like in organizations, a gentleman by the name of Edward Deming, one of our mentors of all of our programs, he says the toughest part of building any business organization is the first 15%. The balance of the 85% is going to be a piece of cake if you handle the first 15%. And that's the same thing in life and in decisions that you make. So a lot of people who are not successful in their own eyes, and I truly believe that it is up to people to really get very clear on what success is to them, not to their spouses, not to their children, not to their family or best friends, but to them, and then communicate that to your beloveds if there has been a big shift from when they met you, and begin to do research, work on it. Don't just jump into stuff, just be methodical about it, and then you will see that, yes, I have never met anyone that was successful in any area of their lives, including marriage, that hasn't had to work hard at it. This whole thing about, well, you know, I want it easy, and, you know, I'm going to take the most comfortable way, that is, I'm worried that there's a whole new generation in certain countries, not all countries. I will say the United States right now. That's the only country I know that has it.
It's the same in the United Kingdom as well.
I would have to take your word for it. But I have to tell you, the easy way, and it's scary because I don't know what the world's going to look like 20 years from now when you have so many people taking the easy road.
Well, why do you think that we... Because logically, we know that nobody gets something easily. Okay, your mum and dad might give you a load of money if you're wealthy and stuff. But we see it time and time again that the successful people, they get to the top and then they release their autobiography and we read their autobiography and we just see that it was struggle, 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 struggle. And then they have a bit of luck and then they have a bit of progress and then it's struggle, struggle. And they keep on going, keep on going, keep on going. But humans nowadays don't really want to hear that story. We kind of want to go with the overnight success, but it's you turn on a laptop, you make a web page, and then suddenly you sell it for $1 million, whatever. Why do you think that we've gone against that work ethic somewhat?
Well, the thing is, number one, may I please just kind of redefine some of the words that you said?
Okay, go for it.
Because we have a program called Money in You where we teach people about that life is designed. Buckminster Fuller, one of our greatest mentors, and people can Google him. They will be very impressed if they don't know who he is. Buckminster Fuller taught us that the biggest mistake that human beings make is making themselves wrong for making mistakes. We are designed to learn from mistakes. So it's not so much that there's struggles. It's like we make mistakes, we pick ourselves up, and we keep going. We make mistakes, pick ourselves up, and keep going. What happens is that there is a lie in the space, in the worldwide, because I work in China a lot. I work in the nearly 30 years in the Asia-Pacific region, and a whole bunch of young Asians are getting the same tone. That what happens is that, like you said, you put up a page and all that. Most people become millionaires. Most people, the large, large percentage, become millionaires in the late 40s and 50s. It is only the exception. It's a very tiny little number that makes it huge, like, you know, the young men with Facebook. So they get all the social media, the news, the magazines. They really focus on that. And this is why I love your show. I love your show because now you're bringing in people that are sharing what they went through, what really happened, and to hopefully touch your audience in some way that, hey, what's happening to you is the human experience. Yeah. There is nobody out there. And some of the saddest people, some of the most amazingly disconnected, sad people that I met on the planet have been very rich people. Because there's nothing worse than working so hard your whole life to reach some certain level of success and then find out that that didn't make you happy. So I think people get confused about the conversation. It's like, don't worry, be happy. This is the only moment you have in your life. That is true. But then there's the other side, which is to build your business, build your organization, build your life, build your family with sound principles, not only generalized principles, which is what runs nature, runs humanity, and then sound business principles, like, you know, tools, information. And the two of them will create a relatively very wonderful, prosperous, successful life. And knowing that the stories that you hear about, you know, the Zuckerbergs of the world is an exception, a very, very big exception. And if you just, you know, come down to earth and get that, then immediately you're going to get a lot happier.
So do you think that really everyone on earth, if they design it to be true, can have a kick-ass life, or at least a lot better than they're currently getting?
Yes, absolutely. And it starts with you. That's why our program is called Money and You. A lot of times people say, well, this program was a lot more about you than about money. I say, yeah, because you're the one that's creating the money. You're the one that's building the business. You're the one that's building your life. You're the one that's making the decisions. So how clear are you? You are the CEO of your life. And so the way that the ego works, the way that the brain works, is like it feels like everything is outside, that it's happening outside and it's happening to us. When you make the shift and get, wait a minute, I'm the director, I'm the CEO, this is my life, and I'm the one that's going to suffer all the consequences. And, you know, when I was in criminal courts, I saw the bad consequences of decisions that people had made in a second, including killing people. You know, in those days, over 70% of the crime in those days of murders that occurred, actually it was more like 80%, occurred amongst people that loved each other, people that they loved each other. They were friends, they were, you know, spouses, parents. And that's when I began to learn about humanity. And I said, that's insane. And it was like 1 second, you can make the wrong decision, you cross that line, and when you cross that line, the consequences are forever. Well, treat your life like that every day. And the decision that if you make to drive drunk, okay, or text while you're driving after all the information you have out there, and then something happens to you, that is the decision that you made. So there's simple decisions, what movie you're going to go see. We're not talking about those. We're talking about things that can truly affect your life and others. And that you have to be a little bit serious about. Don't be serious about stupid things, but be serious about things that really are life-changing.
Because that's the thing that scares people. And I know my listeners are coming to the show in their thousands, and they are looking for answers. They feel that there's more for them to offer. I just did a coaching call just before we started recording, and I was speaking to this lady, and it was quite evident after talking to her for about 30 minutes what she should be doing in life, you know. And I was saying to her, why aren't you doing it? Oh, I don't know, I don't know. And she just seemed to have all these excuses, but it seemed to me a clearly defined path that she was unwilling to step on. And once I actually started saying to her, this is what I think your first step should be, then she was, yeah, I can do that, that's no problem at all, this is what your second step. And we started building momentum. But people are scared to make those decisions that are life-changing. It's like they don't want to lose what they've already got, so they're not willing to take that risk, as Jim Carrey was saying, to actually progress to something that they love.
That's because they give fear too much power. I learned this a long time ago in a program that I did, and somebody would say, I'm scared. And then we would all say, so what? It's like, so what?
So do you get scared?
We all get scared. And, you know, and it's interesting because there's two kinds of fears. One of them is visceral. It's the reptilian brain. You know, this part in the back of your head. You know, if I see something that's moving like a snake, even though it rationally there was no snakes in my apartment, but something moves like a little snake, I'm going to jump out of my skin because I don't like snakes, right? Mm. So that's like my reptilian mind. And you just take some deep breath and go, I just hallucinated, right? Then there are certain things that you know that you should be afraid of. If you do something illegal, you might go to jail. It's very simple. I don't understand why people cheat on their taxes. The Internal Revenue Service has the best systems on the planet. They have access to all your information. Why would you do something so stupid like cheat on your taxes and be caught and take a risk? You will go to jail. If you do that, you will go at least 2 to 5 years to jail. So now, what most people do is they kind of rationalize, well, I'm not going to get caught. Well, this is not going to be me. This is not. No. Just be very aware that there are times when you have a fear that is very rational and you have to abide by it and just say, that's true. Like my mother, we have a deal. She's going to go before me. It's a real clear deal. So sometimes I get invited to go on little airplanes, you know? And I don't like little airplanes. I have had several friends that have never made it out of little airplanes. That's just me. And I go, I'm sorry, I made a promise to my mother. I'm going to wait until after she goes. I can't get in your little airplane. Unless it's a little Learjet. The Learjets I love. And it's just a crazy thought. But you know what? I'm sorry, that is just my reality. And so I will meet them later or take a commercial airplane. And that's my thing. That is my thing. And so I just have a little fear of little airplanes. And I can deal with it. I can go do a whole bunch of work. It's not worth my time. It's not like I get invited every day to go on a little airplane. So now right there is a kind of like a crazy example. But people have things like that every day. So what if you get scared? Take a look at your fears and just say, great, I have fears. Now, what do I really need to do? And make a list. I am such a list writer of, you know, the cons and the pros or something. I'm always writing cons and pros. And that is really important for people to do. It's the most simple tools that you can do. And then you just sleep on it and wake and let your subconscious work on it and then see and just say to yourself, tomorrow morning, I'm going to wake up with a clear decision. And whatever decision you came up with the next morning, follow that. Because you have now what we call, we've gone through a process of perturbation. It's based on the theory of dissipative structures. And when you bring one reality and then you bring another reality, you kind of have a combustion. And then you're percolating, and then your subconscious will bring you what is best for you with your knowledge. It's like there's so much good information in your subconscious of all the learning experiences you have had. And then you also, when you give it facts and data, trust yourself that you will come up with a good decision.
But I know so many people, DC, that are in situations, most of it's employment, to be honest, that they're really unhappy in. And I go, you know, why don't you get another job? Oh, it's not as easy as that. Well, it is. You got this job in the first place. You know, there's thousands of jobs out there. And even if it's not the job you really want straight away, you can do something else. You're making momentum. You're moving away from that position that's causing you distress. And generally, I always find that something new is something better just for that period of time. Even then, if you go, well, actually, I'm not too keen on this job, I carry on working to find something better. But they don't. And I can have the same conversations with somebody about their life and how unhappy they are. And then I'll meet them 3 months later and we're having the same conversations again. So they're scared even though they're in a situation they don't like. Your plane, totally acceptable. I can see that. You don't like going into a plane. You don't want to die, so you'll get another plane or you do something. But when you're in a terrible situation and you still aren't willing to do something, that's just madness, isn't it?
Yeah, and but that is complacency, and that is from your environment. You know, I get a lot of those people that come to our programs, and then usually human beings are very powerful. I have never met a human being that wasn't personally powerful. We all are. And a lot of times people will, when they get very unhappy, they will create some kind of a drama that will kick them out of that job or out of that work. And the sooner that you get that you're the one that attracted that particular situation because you didn't want to be there anymore, the sooner that you're going to go ahead and be getting rid of that. A lot of times when people get no longer work somewhere, they get fired from somewhere or something occurs and they're no longer there, if they really tell the truth, they're really happy that they are no longer there. And the ones that maybe were let go that would really qualify will find another job in 5 minutes. That's not because industries are that way. I mean, when I hear that somebody really good no longer has a job in a business similar to mine, I go running after them and I go, hey, you know, just can you work for me part-time? You're not going to let them go. So what you want to do is take a look at your apathy level. And apathy is a very dangerous thing because it's like going to sleep awake. And then you wake up in your 40s and 50s and realize that, oh my God, what have I been doing with my life? And that's what a lot of times people call it, a midlife crisis. That's what a midlife crisis is. And it happens both for men and women. It doesn't happen just for men. It also happens for women. And for me, it's not even a midlife anymore. You know, our life expectancy is 140 years old now. So I'm going into the second third of my life. I still have a little ways to go. So I...
You've got years to go. Promise you, you'll be here forever.
Oh, we all are. Buckminster Fuller made 50 predictions over 70 years ago. 49 of them have come true. His last prediction that he made, and they're all based on mathematics and studies. The guy was not a California foo-foo predictor. Buckminster Fuller was a serious guy. He created the geodesic dome, the word synergy. Once you find out about Buckminster Fuller, it's very impressive. He said in the 30s that if you were under 40 by the year 1970 and didn't smoke, if by the year 1970 you were under 40 and didn't smoke, your life expectancy was 140 years old. So we are already designed to live much longer. So you need to take a look at your life. Really realistically, and this is why I really support my friends, my students, you know, when I speak to groups like this, it's like the toughest thing is to be real with yourself. And a lot of times other people see it, but you don't. So, and the way to do it is by writing. Write, just write. Go, not that you have to do daily journaling or anything like that, because I'm not that good at that either. But just write and just write and just go, am I really happy? What is it about my life that doesn't work? What is it about my life that it does work? How would I like my ideal life to be? We do that process in our programs. What's my ideal life? And what do I need to do in order to get there? And then begin with small steps. And it might take you a year or two to quit that job you hate. But at least you have brightness of the future, which gives people hope, which gives people happiness.
I think it took me 2 years to quit the job that I disliked. But I look back on it, I think it took me 5 years to actually hit that point. So I think 5 years previously, I was already thinking, I'm not going to do this anymore. Then 2 years to actually work my way out. And then once I had a new boss that came in that made my life really miserable, it was very quick after that. And quite simply, I've never looked back since I've done it. And I would say to everybody out there that as long as you're willing to... As you said right at the very beginning, as long as you're really willing to work like you've never worked before and you hustle like you've never hustled, you can support yourself. And I now, my mindset has totally changed. I think the risky choice in life is actually being an employee. I think if you can earn your own income, then you have got half a chance of having a good life and a happy life.
Yes. I told my mom, she and I were talking yesterday. I call her almost every day. I'm in San Diego. She lives in Los Angeles. And I love talking to her. You know, we have a little joke. She says, we never know when I'm not going to wake up, you know. So, and one of the things I said, she says, how was your day? And I said, I played all day. And she goes, really? What did you do? I said, I worked. And she says, I love it that you're, and she says, you're always playing. You love your work. I said, Mom, I'm so lucky. Since I was 29 years old, I have been playing, you know, and she says, I know. And I'm so happy for you. My mom is so happy for me that I've been playing since I was 29 years old because I do this all day. This is what I do. I'm talking to people like you, you know, and yes, I do a little bit too much computer work right now, but you know what? I love it. I love it. And I didn't quit being a court reporter or the legal system because I didn't like it, because I loved it. And I was making a fortune. By the time I left, I was 27 years old. And my last one, I was just turning 28. I made $80,000 US that year. Okay. That would be like $300,000 US right now. That's a lot of money. And I saved it. And it just so happened that I knew that I was meant to do something else, and I quit, and then I took time off. And I have retired 3 times this life. I recommend to people, if you're not just a backpacker that don't care how much money you have, where you sleep, well, most people are not that way. I call it the Miss Piggy way. Okay, so Miss Piggy likes to have a nice home, you know, likes to have a nice backpack if we go backpacking with silk sheets, you know. We like the good life. Save up and take that time off for a year. Go travel, go read, go do something. Move out of your environment. Just have the courage. You can even take a sabbatical. Some people have worked long, long time for a company and just say, I need to take a year off, take a sabbatical. That's what a sabbatical is. And go and hang out in places and see what happens. But the biggest thing is take that first step. And that is where the fear, you know, fear paralyzes people. So if you're paralyzed right now, as they say in the movie Moonstruck, snap out of it.
I think that analogy of playing every day is perfect, to be honest, because one of the things that we talk about a lot on this show is that many people know what they should be doing in life when they are a child, and they do things when they are a youngster that they love doing, and they would just do it all the time and not get paid for it. But you somehow forget that as you grow up, and then you take on jobs that are just jobs for you, or responsibilities, or salary. And for you to say that you play every day, that means that you're touching on something that you naturally love doing. And since I quit my 9-to-5 job, I work 3 times as hard as I did before, but I feel right. Exactly the same as you. I love doing this, and I would do it for no money. It's just a fantastic thing to do. And I feel exactly like you're saying, that I'm playing, I'm having these conversations, people are enjoying them, and you know, what more could you want from life? Really, what more could you want?
Now, this is the thing. We have been hypnotized. One of my missions is to transform educational systems around the world and eradicate poverty and hunger. You know, people can go to dccordova.com and read all about me. You will see, you know, what I've done. And one of the things that I chose very clearly, and it was a tough decision, was that I wanted to create environments where people could learn a whole new way of earning a living, because we're trained to be sacrificial lambs. We're trained to be employees. Buckminster Fuller called them the great white pirates. Schools originally were created 150 years ago, nearly 200 years ago now, to create employees and people that would do what the great white pirates wanted you to do, pretty much the people with money. Wealth and money hasn't become very, there was nobody was teaching you about money and business and making money until 40 years ago is the industry that I'm in. Prior to that, you had the books Think and Grow Rich, you know, The Science of Getting Rich. Mm. You had metaphysical books. You had, you know, The Dynamic Laws of Prosperity. You kind of had these religious books that talked about prosperity. But overall, it wasn't until nearly 40 years ago that all of a sudden people began to say, hey, wait a minute. You can actually earn a living and be happy at it. So when you talk to someone like my mother's age, you know, it's like they look at you and go, are you nuts? Nobody. You're lucky if you're happy when you get home. Everybody had to sacrifice. We were all starving. We didn't have rich people the way they have it now. Everybody had to work hard. There was not even a middle class in the 30s and 40s. Middle class didn't start until the 50s. So when you have an understanding of how humanity has evolved, and this is why I love Buckminster Fuller and the work that we teach, it's about having people really realize what are you at the effect of. So you have been trained to being unhappy. You got to snap out of it. Most people did not have family, schools, churches, environments that said, don't worry, be happy, go do what you love to do, and you will earn the living and be the happiest person on the planet. Nobody was spoken to like that.
It's such a shame, though, isn't it? You know, that the education system, and I can see why you want to change that, because the education system is a conveyor belt for employment. And the inspiration element of it is just not there a lot unless you get some amazing teacher that we all love.
Correct.
Who kind of inspires you and makes you feel
that
great and really pushes you on.
Yes, and they make movies about.
yeah, they don't come through very, very often. You know, I like the word inspication, which is like inspiration and education. So you don't actually teach kids, but you get them interested in stuff. Really, and
yes.
See what comes out of it, because I don't think a lot of what you learn, once you've done your reading and writing and you're good at that, I don't use binary and whatnot that I learned, and the works of Shakespeare, I'm sure they're lovely to read, but I don't quote them on a daily basis. But the life skill side of things, that's what you need, and that's the things that really will sort of shape the next generation, who have really got opportunities at their fingertips because they're computer savvy and they understand how social media works and all that kind of stuff. And so if you can get them at an early age to feel inspired, when they come out of that, they're like cold springs ready to go.
Yes, and that's why my industry is $100 billion US a year industry. And that's the industry of anything that has to do with new education, transformational education. We were the pioneers of experiential education where you learn through games. 65% of our education is all experiential in nature, because one of the things that we have found that we have had to do is to literally bring out of people's subconscious the decisions that they made very, very young, including myself. I have gone through this whole process. That's why it was so tough for me to leave a work. I mean, my life was dependent on it. I left Los Angeles because I thought I was going to die. You know, I couldn't go to the internal affairs and turn these people in. I saw the policeman the next day in court that I had seen at the party. My life was at stake. So I literally ran away and never went back. But one of the things that is really important to know is that it takes courage. What is that step? And the name of the game today, I think the theme of our conversation is courage. And that's what courage is, that you will take action in the face of fear. That's what courage is. There's something so scary, and fear is very, very paralyzing. So if you're feeling paralyzed right now, just do something different. Just get off your beautiful little butt and do something different. And you will see that there are generalized principles that will kick in, that when you're going in a certain direction and you're very focused, you will have the ripple effects, and you will have what we call precessional effects of things that will occur in your life that will be so magnificent. And that you're going for a new vision of a magnificent life. And that's what creates transformation in a human being.
Well, let's play the words of Steve Jobs, which is the theme of the whole show, because he talks about going on a path that you don't know what you're doing until you look back and connect the dots. And I'll be fascinated to see whether these words have relevance to you. This is Steve Jobs.
Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college, but it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart even when it leads you off the well-worn path. And that will make all the difference.
So do those words have relevance to you, DC?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I love Steve Jobs, and that was so sad that he left so early. And he, when I heard that the first time, I was so moved, and I totally believe in it. That, and it's what I also call following the clues. Following the clues. One of our students, you know, Tony Robbins, you know, he says success leaves clues. That's true. But also, you leave clues for yourself. You have such an incredible, amazing, what Buckminster Fuller called the phantom captain, your own internal GPS that will tell you where to go. The trick is listening and connecting those dots that Stephen Jobs is talking about.
We're going to connect your dots now, and this is the end of the show. And I really don't want to stop this conversation. As I said at the beginning, it could be episode 1, 2, 3, all the way to 9. But I'd like to send you back in time, and this is part of the show we call the Sermon on the Mic. And I'm going to send you back to have a one-on-one with your younger self. And if you could go back and speak to the young DC, what age would you choose and what advice would you give? Well, we're going to find out, because I'm going to play the tune, and when it fades you up, this is the Sermon on the Mic.
With the best bit of the show, the Sermon on the Mic, the Sermon on the Mic.
Okay, so Dorisita, you're now 6 years old, and you just lost your best friend. And I know that you're completely, completely heartbroken, and you don't know what you're going to do without him. And I just want you to know that your life is going to be so beautiful, but it's going to be a little bit later in life. So you're going to go through some things for a little while, but just remember that they're going to get really, really good later in life. It is going to get better. And just know that you're here for a reason, and these things are happening for a reason. And when your heart is broken into a little tiny million little pieces, that there's someone else in charge, and there is a purpose and a reason for all of this, and you will find out. You will be really, really, really happy. There's going to be a come a time when you're going to be really happy, and when sad things happen, they're going to make sense to you, and you're going to know why they're happening. And I just love you, little Dorisita. You're just the cutest little thing in the whole world, and I love you madly.
DC, how can our audience connect with you?
They can go to moneyandyou.com. There's a lot of information about us. And I like them to download a 4-session business make. There's a business success model. It's a wonderful tool for business. They go to moneyandyou.com/free gift. Just small letters, free gift. And that will really, really empower them in business. And they can look me up at dccordova.com and follow all kinds of links there. And I look forward to meeting your audience from around the world.
I'm sure they look forward to meeting you as well. And thank you so much for spending time with us today, joining up those dots of your life. And please come back again when you have more dots to join up, because I do believe that by joining up those dots and connecting our pasts is the best way to build our futures. Dame DC Cordova, thank you so much.
Aloha.
David doesn't want you to become a faded version of the brilliant self you were once to become. So he's...
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Join Up Dots, brought to you exclusively by PodcastersMastery.com, the only resource that shows you how to create a show, build an income, and still have time for the life that you love. Check out PodcastersMastery.com now.
David doesn't want you to become a faded version of the brilliant self you were once to become. So he's put together an amazing guide for you called the 8 Pieces of Advice That Every Successful Entrepreneur Practices, including the 2 that changed his life. Head over to joinupdots.com to download this amazing guide for free, and we'll see you tomorrow on Join Up Dots.